Hi, my name is Rebecca Chicky, and I'm the Senior Director of Behavioral Health for the American Hospital Association. And I want to welcome you to AHA's Associates Bringing Value podcast. It is offered by the AHA, and in this series of podcasts, we're going to speak with a number of AHA Associate Program business partners, really check in on their efforts, and learn how they support AHA hospital and health systems members. Today's topic is aligning your behavioral health priorities with your value-based care strategy. AHA has been working on behalf of behavioral health providers for over 100 years now, but the challenges remain and continue to be, how do we improve access and coverage for behavioral health services? And one of the ways that AHA has been advocating and working on this is through the integration of physical and behavioral health care. This can be a really long and complex journey to do so, but I believe it truly has value when you integrate physical and behavioral health care as our members are moving from fee-for-service to value-based care, because you're treating the whole person. But it's not easy, and it's very complex. So today, to help us answer a few questions related to this complexity, I am honored to be here with Dr. Michael Lipp. He is the Chief Medical Officer of Neuroflow.
Thank you for having me.
Very wonderful to have you here with us today. So, understanding how behavioral health priorities are aligned with value-based care strategies is really critical to the success of any value-based care program. So let's start there. Can you share with us why it's essential to include behavioral health in value-based care?
Absolutely. So let me start by talking about what value-based care is. And when you're moving from a system that has payment structure on fee-for-service and you move to value-based care, you're effectively signing up to move away from a framework that incentivizes a payment around volume to one that really is around optimizing outcomes. And in that kind of framework, instead of optimizing around a clinician's schedule and trying to maximize their schedule, you now have a framework where you're trying to figure out how to improve the health of a total population. And that means that you're now accountable for things like quality, total cost of care, clinical outcomes. But in order to do that successfully, you need to understand how to integrate care in a way that really provides the interventions that achieve the goals you're trying to achieve. But to do that, you really have to know which are the actual interventions that work. And we know that one of the interventions that works is integration of behavioral health. I'll make one other point that it's important for people to understand in a value-based care arrangement, you're ultimately responsible for the behavior of your patients. So that means that your success is dependent on your patient's behavior. So to be successful, you have to know what drives their behavior, and you have to really understand your patients. And that means that you have to go beyond knowing what their medical problems are, beyond knowing what their medication lists are. You need to know them as people. You need to know things like, if you prescribe a medication, can they afford the medication? If you prescribe a diet regimen, do they have access and can they afford the foods that you've told them to eat? If you send them for an appointment with a specialist or for a procedure or for a test, do they have transportation to get there? So these are things that you have to care about in a value-based arrangement, because all of those things ultimately impact the behavior and the outcomes.
Absolutely. Thank you. And for the listeners, you just got 101 value-based care, and that was exceptional because it can be very complex, but you hit all the high points. So well done, Dr. Lipp.
Thank you
so much. I'd love to ask you to share a little bit about your professional journey and what experiences brought you to Neuroflow. And I'm realizing now, if you could share a couple of lines about what is Neuroflow, I think it would help tie some things together.
Absolutely. Well, in Neuroflow, we take a population health approach to behavioral health, so helping organizations move into value-based care. And I'll talk a little bit about my particular journey. My training is actually in internal medicine, and I was also trained as a subspecialist. I spent some time in academia, and I've spent the bulk of my career actually in value-based care organizations, learning how to develop and scale those type of programs. And I was fortunate to be in some of the leading value-based care organizations like ChenMed, Healthcare Partners, Archwell Health, And in those roles, I was able to help build and scale programs that focus on primary care, specialty care, and programs for complex populations for patients with multiple comorbidities. I was also served as chief medical officer at Medicare at the CMS Innovation Center, also known as CMMI. And in that role, I helped develop models of care in primary care and specialty care like ACO REACH, which was formerly called direct contracting, models like Kidney Care Choices model, which focused on patients with advanced kidney disease, amongst others. And I got to NeuroFlow through the acquisition of Quartet Health, and I ultimately joined Quartet Health to really build a value-based care approach to patients with behavioral health needs. And that was always an area that I saw as lacking in a lot of the places that I'd been before and a lot of the patients that we served. And it was just such an important area of need. And it just seemed like such an opportunity to move this space forward because it was so important to the populations that we served. And now with NeuroFlow, I'm able to continue that mission.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the early ACO projects, Montefiore Medical Center, was involved. And I think that for at least the first 3 years, they were one of the top achievers in terms of lowering costs. And when they dove into that, they found out that they actually had a managed Medicaid population that they had experience with, and they integrated physical and behavioral health into their ACO programs and plans. And that is one of the things that put them as a top achiever, just to kind of drill that. I can't remember, Pioneer ACOs?
It's one of the early ones, yes.
Yeah, one of the early ones. So you learned from those lessons from Montefiore and others, and so delighted you've brought it to NeuroFlow. So I'll continue on my journey. Integrating physical and behavioral health is one of my passions because I think it's one of the best ways that we can improve access to care, improve patient outcomes, reduce the total cost of care, improve patient satisfaction and workforce satisfaction, and reduce stigma. Can you tell I'm kind of passionate about this? But again, as I said early on, it's complex. And when you're trying to move from fee-for-service to a value-based care system, that's a whole new journey for many organizations. And then when you're trying to integrate care at the same time, in your own words, how do you see behavioral health aligning more closely with the value-based care initiatives?
It's a great question. I might reframe that. While it may be complex organizationally, it's actually more patient-centered. And from a healthcare system standpoint, we treat often behavioral health and physical health as separate things. But at a patient level, the patients often have both. And so one great thing around value-based care is it is more patient-centered. And when you look at the statistics, I'll kind of go through some of them, it's particularly important. So if you look at a Medicare population, estimates are roughly 1 in 4 Medicare beneficiaries has a behavioral health condition. Roughly 1 in 20 have a serious mental illness. Estimates of at least 50% or more of patients with behavioral health conditions don't get diagnosed and or don't get treated. And when they are diagnosed, it's usually by a PCP. And that PCP is surrounded by a shortage of behavioral health clinicians. And if you look at the care that patients get from a behavioral standpoint, it's lacking and there's limited access. Even patients with serious mental illness often don't get care. At least a third of patients don't get care in a given year. And you put all that together and there's so much strain on primary care that leads to burnout, that leads to poor outcomes, because a lot of it really falls on the PCPs. And as I mentioned before, in a value-based care arrangement, you're now accountable for outcomes. And we know that patients with medical comorbidities that also have behavioral health comorbidities are generally more expensive, use more resources, have worse outcomes. And that's particularly true for patients with serious mental illness that also have shorter life expectancies. And patients with comorbid medical and behavioral illness, it can be 2 to 6 times higher cost. And we know that when you integrate care, the total cost of care goes down. When you have really good behavioral health care, a lot of times the costs go down, not necessarily on the behavioral side, but on the physical health side. But we know that that is a really great way to improve care and lower costs. And it's not dissimilar conceptually to really good outpatient primary care can avoid emergency visits that don't need to happen and can be avoided in the outpatient setting. It's a very similar concept with primary care and behavioral health and physical health.
Wow. So by now, I hope the listeners are intrigued. If they haven't thought about the connection between value, moving from fee-for-service to value-based care, if they haven't thought about the fact that if you integrate care, to your point, individuals with medical and psychiatric or addiction comorbidities, the cost of their care is somewhere between 2 and 6. I've even seen 70% higher than an individual with just a medical condition. If they're not already intrigued, they should be, and I'm betting they are. So my question to you is, for those looking to build a value-based care market, where do they start and what should they be thinking about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll try and simplify it into 4 categories. I'll start with the contracting structure you're in or looking to be in, your clinical capabilities, the incentive structure for the organization, and your population health tools. And I'll talk about each of those. So your contracting structure is really important. So the details of the value-based care arrangement that you're in, it's really important to know what they are, what you're being measured on, what you're being compared to, what percent of your population is in a value-based care arrangement and which are not, and sometimes you may be in multiple arrangements. All that becomes important for how you tailor your resources to make sure you understand how to use those resources the right way and you can expect the proper impact. The second one is on your clinical capabilities. So knowing what you're responsible for, what you're accountable for, and what type of care you're providing to your population and what's being provided by other organizations. And knowing, do you have the right partners? Are they getting the care that they should be getting? Do you have the right processes in place? Are you screening for conditions that you're ultimately responsible for? Are you tracking outcomes the right way within your clinical model? The third one I'll mention is the incentive structure. I think that is one that often gets overlooked, particularly by large organizations, that in a value-based care arrangement, you're ultimately accountable for outcomes. And there are behaviors that are really important for people on the front lines to do. But sometimes those behaviors are different than ones that they would be incentivized to do in a fee-for-service arrangement. And I'll give you some examples. That could be things like, are you blocking time in your schedule for walk-ins for patients that are really ill, that need your help, that you could avoid an emergency visit? Could it be like spending more time with patients with medical complexity that need more time during an appointment, that need a family meeting to talk about the risk benefits of a procedure or a test, or to talk about their home environment, their family life? These things don't necessarily have the right incentive structure in a fee-for-service model. They all don't have payment codes, but in a value-based care model, it's really important. And so making sure that you have the right incentive structure so the people that are actually caring for the patient are doing those things and have the right incentives to do those things. The last one I'll mention is the population health capabilities. It's a making sure that you have the data and tools to track patients, because you're ultimately accountable for a population. And those are patients that are seeing you or not seeing you or seeing somebody else. So you want to have access to whatever data you can get your hands on. And that can be obviously your EMR data, claims data, ADT feeds, notes from specialists, from hospitals, having your hands on all of that data and then knowing how to track those patients that you're accountable for, knowing how to ask the right questions of what's working, what's not working, and ultimately distill it down so that people on the front lines know how to use the data to give better care. So all of that is really important to making sure that you're taking care of a population, not just the patients that are in front of you. I'll make one other point that I think there's a lot of opportunities within behavioral health, and that there's other specialties within medicine that have made so much progress. And you look at what's going on in the oncology space, the musculoskeletal space, the kidney disease space, there's so much progress being made. And I'm optimistic that there could be so much more progress from a behavioral health standpoint, given how important it is for the population. I'll make one more point. I'd say for the clinicians that are looking at value-based care models, I found that for many clinicians, it can often be more rewarding to provide care this way, in part because it is inherently more patient-centric. And for many clinicians, that's more in line with a preventative approach that they went into medicine to practice and ultimately can be more fulfilling.
So whole person care in a reimbursement environment where you have a little more flexibility to address a number of factors that sometimes in the fee-for-service world you're not able to is ultimately the direction that we are and should be moving. Would that be inaccurate?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Lipp, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. and for your willingness to share your time and your expertise. For our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about NeuroFlow and the AHA Associate Program, you can visit the following address. It's sponsor.aha.org/associate-program. Although I suspect that when we post this podcast, there will be a link to that website. And once you get to the website, you can click on our Meet Our Associates to learn more about NeuroFlow. Additionally, if you would like to learn more about the work that the American Hospital Association is doing around integration of physical and behavioral health, go to aha.org/behavioral health. Scroll down just maybe half a page, and you'll see our resources on integration. So it's my honor to have been the host or hostess for the AHA Associates Bringing Value podcast on behavioral health, NeuroFlow, and moving from fee-for-service to value-based care. Thank you so much.